this political coliseum, we slay the rising beast with the fateful sword of truth that transcends hypocrisy and censorship. It's time to unleash yourself from the tyrants of media propaganda on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. This is Unleashed, the Political News Hour.
Welcome to Unleashed, your home for the web's best political news analysis. I'm Dr. Ted Noel, and I'm glad you could join me. Just as I thought, the left couldn't get crazier, and believe me, they've done this so many times I should expect it. When the Supreme Court ruled 9-0, they decided to have a collective hissy fit. The court has ignored everything that we told them, on and on and on. But what the court did, frankly, was say something very simple. This is not a state election. States have the rights to set things up for their own elections, which includes Senate and Congress. But it is a federal election for president. And you can't have individual states writing different rules with random criteria. It just doesn't work. And so what they did was to clarify that for presidential elections, they have to walk by the bright line law that comes from DC. And the only things out there on qualifications are in fact that you have to be 35 years old and be a natural born citizen. And those are stated in exactly those words in the Constitution. That's why nobody cares that somebody who was not going to be 35 years old by the time they would complete a presidential term got kicked off the ballot, or somebody who was obviously not a natural born citizen got kicked off the ballot. Those people lost on bright line language. The language under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is, shall we say, something other than bright line law. Someone who swore an oath and who committed insurrection, well, which oath? There are two separate oaths in the Constitution. There's one referred to by the Ironclad Oath Statute, which is for Congress. And then there is the oath of office for the president, which is different. Different language. You can argue it back and forth. And, oh, insurrection? What's that? Yeah, we've talked about this before. But the Supreme Court simply said, sorry, Charlie, the different states can't write different rules for presidential elections. Yes, you can write your own local rules on how you go about casting ballots and counting ballots, but ultimately it's about counting ballots. You can't choose the candidates. And frankly, the Democrats lost what might have been their last best hope to prevent Donald Trump from getting a victory in the Electoral College. I mean, as we look at the polling data right now, he continues to pull ahead of the occupant. And so when you look at that, Ed, I forgot which primary it was, but Joe Biden lost to no preference, or we had 30% of the Democrats said no preference. That's still pretty bad. Ah, yes, I had confused Nikki Haley losing to none of the above. Sorry. Won't happen again today. But the court said, we're looking at Article 5 of the 14th Amendment, your Section 5, which says that Congress has to write the laws to implement insurrection section. And in fact, they did, and then they had an Amnesty Act, you know, so you had these various acts which went back and forth with regard to Section 3. There are four dissenters. And basically, their dissent boils down to, we didn't need to go to Section 5. That wasn't the question. And this is something that's very interesting about the Supreme Court. Contrary to what the left loves to tell you, the Supreme Court doesn't like to make decisions. You heard me right. They don't want to cover the waterfront. They just absolutely want the very smallest decision they can write, which solves the question. And in this case, the question was, can these guys kick Trump off the ballot? And they decided that because it's a federal election, no, they can't. That should have been it as far as the dissenters were concerned. They said, that answered the question. You don't need to say anything else. And if you've read Supreme Court decisions, you'll discover very commonly there'll be a decision which says, we found that whatever feature it was says that we have to make a particular kind of decision. We have to say for this guy or against this guy based on this preliminary step, which says that all these other steps we could take, we're not even going to look at them because we don't need them. The answer came from the first or second or third step, not the fourth, fifth, sixth, or whatever down the line. It is very common for the court to do this kind of thing. So what are we going to do? You know, we look at this, and I have to admit, I was wrong on how they found that Trump had to be left on the ballot. I thought that they would look at it and say, I'm sorry, we don't have a legal definition of insurrection. Therefore, you cannot say he was an insurrectionist. Therefore, you cannot use Section 3. They left that alone. They never touched the definition. So somewhere along the line, that can come up again. They didn't deal with the question of, is the president an officer of the United States holding an office under the United States? Never touched it. Never said a word about it in the opinion. Basically, what they said was, we found enough. We don't need to go any farther. And this is a real problem because we've got another case coming up. And this is the immunity case with Donald Trump. Yes, they took it, and they're going to take their time on deciding it, which is going to make the Democrats more and more upset. But, I mean, can Keith Olbermann do more than to say we need to abolish the Supreme Court? I mean, how far can you go? He's given up on packing the court. He thinks we ought to get rid of it. Basically, what that means is Congress can do whatever it wants and nobody can stop them. But we really do need courts to keep order. As we look along, though, with the immunity case, Trump said that he should be absolutely immune for all actions he takes that are within the perimeter of his duties as president. And frankly, I agree with him. The problem is, where is the perimeter? Now, we already have a judicial decision that says he's immune from civil suit for things he does as president. And he ought to be also immune from criminal prosecution for things he does as president. The question, though, is, where do you find the boundary? And I think what the court's going to say, and I have a good friend who is a legal authority, he's very conservative and was a clerk for Ruth Bader Ginsburg because he wanted to learn what the other side said and thought. We have to find out where the perimeter is. And what's going to happen is that the court will send this back down for trial. But the question that has to be answered is, where do you draw the line? Where is the fence? Do we use something called strict scrutiny, which says you have to have the absolute strictest view of what's going on? Now, actually, I'm using this in an inverted route. Or do we simply look at it and say the president has to present what's called a colorable argument. That is, where it makes some degree of legal sense that this action was within his duties as president. If he does that, then he's immune. But the court has to then pass that threshold. If there is no reasonable argument that what he was doing was part of his duties, then you can go after him. You know, if he ordered somebody to go kill somebody on Fifth Avenue, that's not presidential duties as a rule. So you have a court that doesn't like to rule on anything if it doesn't have to. That's called a very conservative and careful court. I wish they'd do a little more, to be honest. The court could save itself a lot of time and effort by taking a little broader view of some questions. You know, it's the two birds with one rock argument. They should have solved the question of, is the president an officer of the United States, holding an office under the United States, because it will prevent another suit coming up about the Emoluments Clause, which, if he's not an officer of the United States, the Emoluments Clause doesn't apply to him. And they should have gone to tackle the definition of insurrection for Section 3. But no, narrow decisions. There are other questions they could look at. For example, they had a wonderful case in Bruin, which basically restored gun rights in much of the country. And what happens? We have states that are running legal circles around it. We even have courts like the Hawaii Supreme Court sitting here saying, we don't have to listen to the U.S. Supreme Court. And they're arguing about what are sensitive places. You know, they basically made the entire state of New York a sensitive place. Well, that ain't what it means. They're arguing about assault weapons. Well, they want to ban AR-15s, which are the most common weapon in America used for peaceful purposes, which is exactly what is the protected weapon. They want to argue about magazine capacity. They want to argue about California does this, all kinds of appearance factors. Does it have a particular kind of grip on the front, or does it have a detachable magazine, and so on? These are all things that should be answered by a broader view. But I'll guarantee you, in the gun law question, they're going to get flooded with cases because there are literally dozens already on their way up. There are going to be dozens more if they don't address a wider question. Now, we will see you after the break for more excellent analysis of our political situation.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Welcome back to Unleashed. Remember that you can get articles, podcasts, and pertinent news on AmericaOutloud.news. You'll always find the uncensored truth from a team of truth seekers who put God and country first. As you'll recall from the first segment, I said just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, it does. The Democrats just don't get it. And it turns out there is something in the Constitution called the Take Care Clause. And it simply says that the president shall, not will, not maybe, might. It's kind of like saying that the 10 commandments are the 10 commandments, not the 10 suggestions. The president shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. He doesn't get a choice. He has to do it. And the open border is exhibit A of why he should be impeached. And we know that he has sued to keep the open border open, absolutely contrary to the law. He says, well, no, it came from Donald Trump. No, it didn't. Donald Trump had pretty well settled things out. All you had to do was keep doing what he was doing. So I'm sorry, Joe, you did it. You broke it. You bought it. You had the lawsuit about Texas razor wire that you wanted to be able to come in and cut it. Well, you won that, but the lawsuit didn't say that Texas couldn't put more razor wire back up, which they have done. Then you had the new law in Texas that allows them, when they find an illegal, to arrest them and send them home. I mean, this is the natural thing that Texas ought to be doing, especially since they're not doing anything contrary to federal law. They're actually just enforcing federal law. Of course, remember that Obama sued Arizona because, oh yeah, Arizona was enforcing federal law when they found illegals at a traffic stop. But we'll see how this one goes. It may very well end up the same way. But this is clearly the opposite of taking care that the laws be faithfully executed. Biden is doing everything he possibly can to be an evil president. You heard me right. The word is evil. For the simple reason that it seems to serve his purposes. And what are those purposes? Well, we have just learned in the last couple of days from the Center for Immigration Studies that Biden flew in 320,000 Latin Americans from Latin American cities into the U.S. and dropped them off. He leapfrogged over the border. Now, wait a minute. The Center for Immigration Studies filed a Freedom of Information Act and found out what was going on. Unfortunately, what they didn't find out was which airlines, which cities on either end and so on. But they did find that there was no history of asylum claims, no history of adjudicated asylum claims. This is a clear violation of the Take Care Clause. It is willful criminality. Now, forget about all of the bribery stuff that's going on or the record stuff. Doesn't matter. This is where it all comes to roost. If Biden said, look, I'm simply exercising prosecutorial discretion. I'm not going to prosecute this group, the DACA, or that group, whatever. Well, you have some sort of a legal argument that that's the case. But this is radically different. This is sending airliners down there and bringing them back. And let us assume you use a big airliner and you have 250 people in it, which is a pretty good sized plane. When we're talking 320,000, my eyeball arithmetic says that's about 1,300 flights. Not one, not 10, not 100, 1,300. 1,300 airline trips paid for by somebody in the government to some contracted airline, unless he sent military planes. Well, now if he sent military planes, that gets even worse, because now he's not saying I'm sending money over here for them to do it, and they're the ones doing it. It's I sent my military down there. That's no surprise. But this, once again, raises a question of why would he be so willing, so eager to do things that are just absolutely in violation of every statute we've got. Now, granted, our statutes are somewhat of a mess, but they do say if you want to stay in the United States, you have to have what's called a colorable claim of oppression. You have to have political asylum as the issue so that you can come in and stay as an asylum seeker. And that has to be done in a proper manner. Under international standards, if you're down in Guatemala or Nicaragua or wherever, the next country you come up to is the one where you're supposed to be saying, hey, guys, I have an asylum claim, and you have to stay there until the claim is adjudicated. But no, they all come up here. He's violating every part of the Take Care Clause. And it's very clear that he is intentionally violating. He has ordered the Department of Homeland Security to hide the passenger manifests, the origins and the destinations. And there's absolutely no vetting. And we have to ask why. Well, the usual answer is they need Democrat voters. The great replacement theory that the Democrats love to thumb their noses at. Well, yeah, that's true. But right now under federal law, if you are a foreign citizen, voting in any election is a felony. So for the moment, it's not a problem for Democrats because you've got a Democrat Department of Justice that won't even look at it. The moment Trump gets elected, that changes and things get really interesting. And then you have to look at, the former attorney general who has no immunity of any sort. He can be charged with various crimes of suborning this and that and the other crime. He could be charged with suborning vote fraud, with suborning immigration fraud, and so on, by refusing to prosecute anybody. So, you know, it's bad stuff there. But there's another reason for this. All of these people will boost populations in the Democrat areas. I know New York is screaming that, oh my God, we need all of this other money. We're being overrun. We have too many people in New York, and on and on. Well, you know, you add another 100,000 in New York City, you're probably going to have 100,000 move to Florida from New York City because they're fed up with all of the left-wing stuff. And, you know, you're going to lose a lot of businesses. But if you can keep all of those new people there and you can get the Census Bureau to count them, because remember, Trump tried to get rid of counting them. He was a little late on having it happen, and it
got blocked by the court because he didn't follow the rules on how to do it. But you look at that and you say, okay, if we have enough people there, then we're going to have enough people to, even if they can't vote, let's say I've got to have 800,000 people in a legislative district or in a congressional district. Well, if 200,000 of them are illegals and I only have 600,000 citizens, hey, no sweat. Suppose it really went crazy and went 400-400. Well, you now have a Democrat representing 400 when they should be representing 800,000 citizens. You begin to see what's happening. It's a replacement of population to make it easier for Democrats to get numbers in the House of Representatives. But Democrats don't seem to understand that Americans are fed up with this nonsense. And you have to ask, why in the world is that? Well, when you see Lake and Riley's murder, you had an illegal alien in New York arrested on a felony, immediately let out on the street. He goes down to Georgia and he kills Lake and Riley. It was one of those senseless things. He didn't even know her. And when you, if the reporting is correct, I mean, he caved her head in with some blunt instrument. Then this guy's bad. And why was he here? Well, he should have been deported after he was arrested in New York because, among other things, well, he's been a criminal for a while. Lots of reasons you should be able to deport him, but no, the Democrats don't care about you. If these illegals are breaking in and destroying stores, stealing everything, the stores leave. Democrats can't stop that. But, you know, why are you guys upset? These are just peaceful people. This is a mostly peaceful group of people. Oh, yeah, but we're getting more and more of our mostly peaceful people hurt, murdered. You know, they gather around and kick an old elderly lady, as I recall, until she dies. This is not a group of people we want anywhere near. But really, the big answer has nothing to do with that. They think voters are going to look totally past that. Why? They want all of these people here so they will be on welfare. Now, remember, the mayor of New York is saying, I don't have the money for it. They actually want all of these people there where the city is paying the money for them, where the city is making it possible for the illegals to work. Or the governor of New York is now offering jobs in state government to illegals. They need these people dependent on them. They need slaves. And remember, slaves are what make Democrats powerful. If we go back and look at the history of the Democrat Party, it came from slavery. It was the party of slavery that grew after the War of 1812 in the South. It owned slaves, and frankly, all of them were a bit upset with what became the Three-Fifths Compromise in the Constitution because the people in the North said, wait a minute, you've got a lot of people who won't be citizens, and yet you're counting them in order to figure out how many people you have in Congress. You're going to run the Congress if we let you count all of your slaves for purposes of congressional apportionment. But no, if the Democrats bring in the illegals, they become the new slaves. The illegals depend on the Democrats to get here. They depend on the Democrats for lodging, for jobs, and they create a humanitarian crisis where the cities and the Democrat states can try to tax Republican states to pay for it. Yeah, that's right. This is an exercise of raw power. But the Democrats, I don't think, are really looking for voters. They're looking for slaves. And what they want is to blame us for what they're doing. And there is no historical background. When you look right through it, and I grew up in northern Alabama during the Civil Rights Movement. The Democrats were the Ku Klux Klan. They were the ones who created the Jim Crow laws. You know, and this was after the slaves had been freed, after the Civil War. The Democrats were the ones who said, we're going to take the guns away from the blacks because the guns are the only thing that make the blacks able to keep us from putting them back in chains. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll do what we can with terror. The Klan was the terror wing of the Democrat Party. A black man looks at a white woman, he's going to be strung up from a tree. That's the way it works. And we only have to do one or two of them to keep the rest of them in order. Now, if you think I'm overstating it, go back and look at how the Democrat Party rose. The Democrats are evil in the extreme. They have no interest whatever in anything that you or I want. They want to have enough slaves who get counted to undo the three-fifths compromise so that they can get extra people in Congress to then sway the Congress to do the things the Democrats want so the Democrats get more power. And if you think I'm overstating that, let's go back and quote Valerie Jarrett. You've forgotten about her? She was Obama's consigliere. And back in 2008, after the election, what did she say? Quote, we'll be ready to rule on day one. That word was R-U-L-E, rule. Democrats regard themselves as a royalty. They have a divine right to rule. They're a lot like King James, who commissioned the King James Bible. He didn't like the Geneva Bible because it had marginal notes that challenged the king's right to rule under the divine right theory. So he says, I want a new Bible, we're all familiar with it, which doesn't have those marginal notes. And ultimately he got it. And of course, like most Democrats, he cheated. After he hired very effective translation committees, he took the printing job, handed it to one of his buddies, and then stiffed all the translators. Yep, that's the case. Go back and read the book In the Beginning, How the King James Bible Formed the English Language. It's a good read. But King James would have been a pretty darn good Democrat. He ruled. He liked the divine right to rule. And the Democrats thought by kicking Trump off the ballot, there would be no possibility that he would ever reach 270 electoral votes. Even if he won a bunch of states, there would be a bunch of states where he wasn't on the ballot and could not win. So what did they do? They went right after it and said, hey, no sweat. We'll kick him off ballots. Colorado's a good start. Maine's a good start. And the Supreme Court reamed him a new one. He's on the ballot in all 50 states. This is really their last gasp to try to get rid of him. Because if you look at the January 6th case, because of all the things that are going on, the Supreme Court may wait until June or July to rule on it. Well, if they, let's suppose they rule on it in July, then it goes back to the trial court where Trump will then immediately file to disqualify Jack Smith on the grounds that he occupies an office that does not exist. Yeah, you heard me. We talked about this before. And that will have to percolate up through the court. So the J6 case won't ever get tried before the election. Even if that didn't stop things, There's all kinds of legal stuff going on. It's going to take months to get that to trial. So that won't get tried before the election. So they lost that chance. In Florida, that one will never get tried before the election because of all of the stuff involving production and secrecy and whatnot. What are we going to let the attorneys see? On and on and on. They're going to lose that. And of course, we all know about the, shall we say, interesting exercise that's going on in Atlanta. Now, I've just read one commentator who thinks that the judge will leave Fannie Willis on the case for a couple of reasons. One, he worked in that DA's office under Fannie Willis. Two, he was appointed to fill out the end of another term, and he runs for election in June. And in Atlanta, if he kicks Fannie Willis off the case, he probably loses his spot. So there's a pretty good chance that he will sit back and say no. But if he actually acts like a real honest judge, that case will go away. So we'll see what happens. And of course, if the Supreme Court rules that Trump has immunity and they have to find the boundaries of it, then everything in Fannie Willis's case gets caught up in that as well. And so they're not going to get him off the ballot. They're not going to kick him out of the election. He will probably win the election because none of these cases will be decided. So we'll see what happens. After the break, we will have more to talk about. Oh, guess what? The law of the bureaucrat again. This time, the NIH syndrome. No, we're not talking about the National Institutes of Health. Before we go, remember to spread the news about America Out Loud articles and podcasts. Become active patriots who make a difference. Let's do everything we can to keep the truth alive.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Today's high-stress, on-the-go lifestyle makes it hard to stay heart healthy. Lifestyle changes like exercise and diet are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support three aspects of heart health: cholesterol, blood pressure, and triglycerides, with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 13 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Welcome back to Unleashed. I'm Dr. Ted Noel. And remember to visit our America Out Loud shop for the latest health resources and product innovations that may well enhance your life. Use promo code OUTLOUD to get special discounts only for our America Out Loud family. As promised, the NIH syndrome.
But you have to understand that the NIH syndrome is a very, very different thing. It has nothing to do with the National Institutes of Health. It is a piece of the law of the bureaucrat demonstrating as not invented here. And remember, the bureaucrat is by definition the smartest person in the room. That means if there is an innovation of some sort, he can't allow it to happen. Doesn't matter if it's a good idea or not. He cannot allow it to happen. It has to come through him and work the proper way. So, for example, we now have an Army product called the Counter Unmanned Aerial System, C-UAS, 50,000 watt laser weapon. Now, this has been around for a couple of years. I've been reading about it. They've been testing it here and there. And the basic idea is that it's got tracking stuff, and it's mounted on a Stryker armored personnel carrier. And there's enough power from the engine to charge up the batteries and everything else. And this thing can then shoot down drones. It is, in theory, good enough to shoot down artillery shells, explode them up in the air, you know, long before they can harm anybody. And you can imagine all the good things it could do. Now, every time it fires, it probably costs you $20 for all of the gas and whatever else to run. But it's conceivably pretty darn good a thing. They've even talked about putting this sort of an idea on ships in the past, but nobody's ever gotten around to it. And the Army said, we've got to test this thing out in the, well, let's go to the Middle East. Maybe we should go to Saudi Arabia or someplace like that where we can put it out and test it in, quote, real world conditions. Because, you know, Saudi Arabia has sandstorms, you know, and that would cause the beam to scatter all over creation, not work. And, you know, it sounds like a good idea, but they've forgotten something. And it's a big something. Now, we only have to go back to World War II to see what's going on. In battle, sometimes people make perfectly good inventions and they really work. The B-25 Mitchell bomber was used as a medium bomber designed to be, you know, attacking targets where you didn't need the massive bomb load of a B-17 or a B-24 or later on the B-29. It was much more maneuverable, it's smaller, etc. And it got stuck out into the Pacific theater of operations, where it turned out the people on the field said, we don't like this bomber the way it sits. You know, you got one 50 caliber machine gun mounted out the nose. You got a couple of turrets and whatnot. And those are designed to defend us against Jap Zeros, which is fine. But let's look at this a little differently. And they mounted four 50 cals in the nose, tried it out, liked it so much, they put eight 50 cals in the nose and made an incredibly good strafing airplane. And you could go over an airfield and just wipe it out with three or four of these going down with 850 caliber machine guns, just hosing the runway and all the places where the airplanes are around it. Or you could use it when there's a freighter. You find him, you come in, and remember, freighters or even up to destroyers don't have a whole lot of armor. You got that many 50 cals coming in, you're going to cause them a world of hurt. And B-25s sank a lot of shipping with guns this way. And then somebody said, you know, there's a better way to do this yet. And so they put a howitzer in the nose. And they would come in, set up for strafing, and they would fire an artillery shell at the ship and let it take care of things. This was the forerunner of what became known as Spooky in Vietnam, which was a C-47. It's a DC-3 with an incredible amount of guns on it. And basically, if Spooky was called in, nothing on the ground survived. And now we have a C-130 based variant of it called the Spectre gunship. All of this came out of people in the field saying, we need something. Well, go to the Red Sea. We've got all of the Houthis throwing these missiles and drones and so on at shipping in the Red Sea. And it costs us $1 million missile to shoot down a $2,000 drone. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Why not do some real world testing? That's what they're calling for. Mount these suckers on a ship. It would be no sweat to do it. All you need to mount them is a couple of welders and then some cables down for electrical power. And believe me, a ship's got a lot more electrical power than a Stryker fighting vehicle. So you could put them there and put three or four of them on three or four ships and let them tackle the drones before they get in range where you need to use missiles or SeaWiz to knock them down. Pretty quickly, you're going to learn whether they work, if they're not working, what's going on. But no, we have run into the law of the bureaucrat in the NIH syndrome, not invented here. And now let us talk about one relative of the law of the bureaucrat. It's called the law of subsidy. Every economist will tell you that when you subsidize something, you're going to get more of it. Every economist in the world is going to tell you that. And so we know, for example, when we subsidize universities by making sure that students can all go. Remember, all the politicians are saying everybody needs to be able to go to college. And now they're talking about let's make college free. And what are they actually doing? They're actually saying we want to run taxpayer money into the colleges. They've been doing it for decades with Pell Grants and federally insured student loans. These were never benefits to the student. They were always, always a benefit to the university. And I will go back into my own personal family history. My dad went to college after World War II. When he arrived at Walla Walla College in Eastern Washington, it was a private college. He and mom had kids. My two older brothers were already little kiddies. They were toddlers. And dad went to school. He took a full load working on getting a physics degree. Mom was taking care of toddlers. They lived in a converted chicken coop. You heard me right. It was probably not a structure that would be approved these days for human habitation, but they lived in a converted chicken coop. Mom had two kids, pretty soon was pregnant with my sister, and she took in some other kids, and she brought some money in watching other kids, you know, students' kids. And dad did the job that he had done during World War II for United Airlines. He did radio repair. And when he came out of Walla Walla College, there were three kids in the house, my two older brothers and my sister. And dad had no loans. He had paid all of his bills and he graduated with his degree and went to work for the Alaska Communication System based out of Seattle. Well, my two older brothers went to the same college, again, a private college, and they both worked. I don't remember where Ken worked, but Dick worked in the dairy. And between the work that they could do and a little bit of support from mom and dad, they graduated with no loans. Now, I was fortunate. I went to college on a full academic scholarship. But had I not had that, I probably would have had some debt, although I was able to work most of the way. And then when I went to medical school, I came out with $24,000 in debt in 1976. So you can do the math from now. My daughter went to the same medical school I went to, and her bills were big. All of this is price inflation that came from all of the federally insured student loans and all of the Pell Grants. What happened was that after World War II, 8% of the population were college graduates. And with the GI Bill, that bumped up a point or two. Now they're trying, we need to get everybody, but not everybody needs it. So what they're doing is they're trying to fund their friends. And this is another reason we should get rid of the Department of Education, but that's just another story for another day. If you don't fund these colleges, which are doing all sorts of left-wing education, all of a sudden, people who want to go to college are going to say, if I'm going to go pay your tuition, I better get a skill that puts me in a job that makes money. Because otherwise, it ain't happening. And guess what? You didn't just defund these schools that have all the fancy buildings. You defunded the left wing. And that's one of the biggest benefits should we get rid of it. But let's come back to the Army, and or should say military. World War II, there was another innovation called the Blueberry Harbor. After the D-Day landing, we had to have a harbor to bring goods ashore. What did they do? They brought a whole bunch of rickety ships, put them in the right place, scuttled them, and on top of them built a deck so that you could pull other ships up, tie them up, unload them, and bring cargo ashore. Innovation on the fly. And now we have some other innovations. There may be something that you guys have heard about going on over in Ukraine. A lot of people shooting at each other. And Ukraine wanted F-16s. Well, that's a pretty nice, fancy jet. Many millions of dollars. And ultimately, they've gotten some. But what kind of aircraft do they really need? They need really effective ground attack aircraft. And the most effective ground attack aircraft in the world is the A-10 Thunderbolt II, also known as the Warthog. But the Warthog requires some specialized skills and training and so on. And there are two other airplanes available. Now, the innovation that led to the B-25 gunship, to the Blueberry Harbor, and so on, is the same kind of innovation that has led to the development of truly effective, inexpensive ground attack aircraft. One of them is called the Archangel. And the Archangel is by a company called IOMAX, and it is a Thrush 710P crop duster. You heard me right. It's a crop duster. Now, I am a private rated pilot. If you teach me how to start up and manage that turboprop engine on the nose, I could fly it. It's a stick and rudder airplane, pure and simple. And guess what? You've got lots of crop duster pilots in the Ukraine because it's a big agricultural area. You got people who already fly Thrush 710Ps. So all they need is the Archangel. And I spent some time checking on this. It turns out all up with all of the weapons, with the titanium bathtub to protect the pilot and whatnot, at max, this airplane costs $5 million. At max. But guess what? It and its counterpart, the Sky Warden, which is an adaptation of, are you ready for this? It's L3 Harris is the company, but it's another crop duster. It's an air tractor 802 that is been adapted the same way. Titanium bathtub for pilot protection, hard points for weapons. These suckers can fly for up to 10 hours at treetop height or below. They can be just behind the battle space. When something comes up where they need it, boom, they're right there, fire, boom, they're gone. And you don't need a Super G-Wiz pilot to do it. You can have pretty much any crop duster pilot in the world can handle it. And now you've got a supremely effective ground attack airplane. What do we have? We have the NIH syndrome. Not invented here. It's part of the law of the bureaucrat. You developed a procurement bureaucracy in the Pentagon, and they can't see beyond the end of their pencils. This is our problem. But remember who's getting rich off of this. The people who make F-16s and F-35s and all kinds of other polydollar airplanes. Sounds good for them, but the Ukraine war is a way of paying off the people in the military industrial complex who can then pay off their buddies in Congress. This is Dr. Ted Noel. Remember, it's the message that matters. Let's unleash the truth.